Welcome to the Disruptive Entrepreneur Podcast.
What does the word disruptive mean to you?
It means going beyond the ordinary, going beyond the status quo.
Not thinking in the conventional way, not just sort of following the herd.
Disruptive means taking things up, you know?
Disruptive entrepreneur is somebody who sees the problem and embraces the problem with a new way.
Shake up and awakening.
Quality will take care of itself, and you'll go from being disruptive but also profitable.
When you use your own reservoir of talent, when you love what you do, then you disrupt.
Mix it up, change it up, and dominate.
And now, your host, 8 times best-selling author and double world record holder, Rob Moore.
Hi, it's Rob Moore here, the disruptive entrepreneur. And I am with, officially, the sexiest woman in the world. And it's actually official, or it was official.
I can't believe you just said that. Oh, my goodness.
A fact is a fact, isn't it? You were voted the sexiest woman in the world, weren't you?
Yeah, that was like 500 years ago. Now, the sexiest thing is, not much. You know, when you become a mom of 2 crazy 7-year-olds, it all changes.
Right, well, I'll tell you what, I'd love to talk about that, you know, because obviously being a mum and, you know, there's so much to you. You've done so many things. And I think you really embody what an entrepreneur is, and I'd love your definition in a moment. So before we get into that side of it, be honest, how did it feel to be voted the sexiest woman on earth? Did it make you feel good? How did it feel?
Babes, it's awesome. Are you joking? I mean, it's crazy. The first thing I did is call up my mom, and my mom was, yes, great. You know, it was that time. It was, you know, I was the flavor of the moment. I was doing covers every single month. You know, I was probably had my picture in the loo of every single, you know, teenager in the country. You know, it was a great time. It was a fun time. It was a wild time. I was completely wild. I mean, I'm from nothing. I'm from very humble background. To traveling first class and private everywhere and crazy celeb, you know, MTV Music Awards for, you know, shooting the cover, hurry up, get on a plane and then be whisked off by a police escort, get there. I never forget this. This was my introduction, right? So I was doing the MTV Music Awards and I was doing it with Steven Tyler, get off a plane. Police escorted me 130 miles an hour, get out of the car, hurry up, go into my dressing room where I open the door and there's this big gust of smoke. And I thought, what the heck is going on here? Missy Elliott's like, yo, baby, come in. I thought, oh, I can't believe I'm sharing a dressing room with Missy Elliott. Are you joking? And then they said, hurry up, got to get on stage. And then there's Steve and Tyler. It was just wild. It was crazy. It was a blessing. The modeling, you know, you got to play to your strengths. And I couldn't afford to put myself through university. So at the time I played to my strengths, and that's one thing I'll get into it a little bit more elaborately about the entrepreneurship. You know, did I want to be a model? No, I wanted to be governor of California. I wanted to get into, you know, politics. And then I ended up modeling. So, you know, wow. I just grabbed an opportunity when I saw it and I went with it.
So let's talk about all that. We've got so much to talk about. And there's something you said I'd love to pick up on. But first, and I don't think I've admitted this on a live stream, but I won Face of Peterborough 1999 modeling competition.
Awesome. I bet your mom was proud of that one.
Yeah. About the only person, but yeah, there you go. Anyway, this is not about me. You said you were flavor of the month, Caprice. How do you handle when your time has sort of gone and you're not flavor of the month and then someone younger or, you know, more sort of well-known almost replaces you, if you like?
Well, I think it's really important is you've got to put your ego in a very, and this goes for all entrepreneurs, put your ego in your back pocket, you know, and that's exactly what I did. Did it feel good? Not really, but I was realistic. It was going to happen at some point. And that's what happened when I turned 30. I thought, oh my God, 1 foot in the grave, it's over, you know, even at the top of my game. And I had to think of plan B. I had to be smart. because I had the power when I was at the top of my game. And this is where a lot of people, especially in the entertainment industry, where they go wrong, is they think it's going to, you know, the gravy train is going to last forever. And let me tell you something, it doesn't. It's a roller coaster. So, you know, so I thought of plan B early on, and that's when I started by Caprice Products.
And so did you plan that before you ended your career? I had a 45-minute phone call with probably the most famous snooker player that's ever lived, helping him plan his career before he retires. I won't say his name, but you could probably figure it out. Had you made that plan before you knew your time was up, or have you just fallen into things?
No, I think it's really important to make a plan. You have to. All successful entrepreneurs do, but you have to be flexible as well. Because this is what, you know, being an entrepreneur is. It just takes you in so many different directions, and you have to be pliable. And and another thing is, don't put all your eggs in one basket. You have to hedge. So, and that's what I did. I started, you know, I didn't supply myself initially because I didn't know what the hell I was doing. So I thought, okay, I'm going to try and convince somebody else to take the risk and see if the brand works. And then I'll dive in and I'll put in my own money. And that's what I did. I mean, it took a long time to convince somebody because nobody was doing license deals at the time. So I had called up this guy called Terry Green, and he was the flavor of the moment. He was head of Debenhams, which I know Debenhams doesn't exist, but at the time it was the business. It was thriving. And so he took the meeting, and I convinced him. I said, there's something called a license deal. Nobody's doing it. Now, I know it's saturated, but at the time, this was in 2000. It wasn't. The only person who was doing it, I think, was Elle McPherson. She was doing it in Australia. Anyways, so I convinced him to do it. He invested a couple million, but the first collection of By Caprice lingerie. Now, also, what you have to do is you have to identify what's your target market. Just don't say, oh, my God, I've got a really great deal. Yay. No, I mean, you've got to identify who's your target market. And I did. And that's why I called up Debenhams. And what will people buy into that Caprice will sell? That was lingerie at the time. It was a no-brainer. And so Terry Green went with it. And the first collection sold out, completely sold out in a few weeks. And he was the flavor of the moment. Then, you know, this whole license deal concept, everyone was starting to take notice. And then about 5 years later, not even 5 years, I think it was about 3.5 years, I started to think, because other people started to catch on to this, and other celebrity and the CEOs of these big conglomerates were taking on other celebrities and doing these license deals. And I thought, well, I'm going to be replaced. I am. I'm not going to be the flavor of the moment again. So I wanted to take back my license and to supply myself. And so then that was my next move. So also entrepreneurship, I think, is you can't just be complacent. You got to keep moving forward. You got to keep expanding. You got to keep being innovative. And so that's what I've continued to do. And also, I think really successful entrepreneurs, I don't go to sleep at night till God knows what time, 1 o'clock. I work about 100 hours a week. Wow. If you want to be rich, if you want to be successful, there is no shortcut, folks. You got to put the work in. You got to put the hours in. And that's what I've done continuously. Now I have my kids. So now it's a little, an extra firecracker up my tushy.
Right. Well, we're going to get to some of these things because it's just setting this up nicely. So I think, and I might have missed some things here, but model, businesswoman, actress, TV personality. I believe you mentor people as well. That's lots of things. And you said it's good to not, you know, not have all your eggs in one basket, be quite diversified. How would you define Caprice, who you are? What's your identity? If I were to say, you know, who are you and what do? What would you say?
Well, I couldn't describe myself in one word. There's no way. I could in a few words that I'll share with you. Obviously, I came out of my mom's stomach saying, I want to make money. I want to be successful. I want to do this. And this is very American. But also, you know, my mom, I grew up in a single household, and my mom was quite a go-getter. as well. So I grew up with this. I grew up with this attitude. And I also grew up, you know, my mom always said, let me tell you something, Cam. She said, independence is happiness. Because I could have been a gold digger. I mean, I met tons of rich guys. I probably would have been richer by doing that. But it wasn't an option. I didn't go down that road. You know, there was a lot of hardships, but it developed me into this very colorful person that I am today. But I also think it's really important, and it's important to me, is to give back. Like the universe or whatever you want to call it. I don't want to get all hippy-dippy spiritual on you, even though I am. I worked my little tushy off, but I mean, I'm so blessed with the life that I have, but I've worked for it. And I like to give back, especially to young, ambitious entrepreneurs. I think it's really, really important. Life is a cycle. Yeah, it's good to take, but it's also good to give back. Gosh, what else? Oh, God.
Can I be bold and make a statement or a suggestion?
Of course. Yeah.
I think you're a disruptive entrepreneur.
I love that. I'll take it.
I do. Well, you know, you took the chance and the opportunity of modeling, not necessarily planning it. You planned the next move in your career before you were redundant in the last move. You've built your own business and brand in a partnership. Then you took that license back. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think the difference between a business person and an entrepreneur is an entrepreneur can be successful in multiple disciplines, whereas a solopreneur or an entrepreneur often just in one thing. So, yeah, disruptive entrepreneur.
Oh, so I'll take it. But I also wanted to share one more thing, because maybe some people haven't shared it. But, you know, being an entrepreneur, obviously I've had liquidity, and I continue to have, thank God. And then of course I reinvest. And I think it's really, really important as an entrepreneur. There's another, how could I say, it's really important when you start dipping and hedging and not just put all your eggs in one basket. There's a lot of businesses as well that I wasn't successful, but a smart entrepreneur will realize, okay, this is not working. And instead of putting more of your resources, more of your time, and remember your time is a lot of money. And obviously you're putting more financial, sometimes the smartest move is to say, you know what, it's not working. Just walk away and go on to the next thing. And there were a few things that I did that didn't work out. And the smartest thing I ever could have done is just walk away from it and put all my resources into what's working.
Yeah. I've just taken a few notes because that's just fired up a couple more questions in me. So we'll come to that. Is there a story behind your name? Because it's a very unique name. I don't think I've ever
heard. Everyone thinks it's fake. You know, I remember when I first started modeling, and also people thought that the newspapers would say that I was a man. I mean, I thought it was a joke, but they've said the craziest thing. this media, and also don't always believe what you read. Oh, the media is crazy. They're my best friends, but then they could be so hardcore. But you know, at the end of the day, I need them. They need me. Because, you know, you create the awareness and you create the sales. So that's another thing. But we'll get into that a little bit later with marketing. My name is real. And my mom got it from, I don't know if she was big here. It's an actress called Doris Day. And Doris Day did this movie way before I was born. And it was called Caprice. And my mom said, if I ever have a daughter, I'm going to name her Caprice. And then I popped out. So that's basically my story.
Love it. Okay. I've been really excited about our conversation today to talk about being a successful entrepreneur and raising children. You know, I mentor many mum entrepreneurs, obviously dads too, but many single mum entrepreneurs, and it's hard. And they don't have as much time. They've got this sort of paradox between, I want to be a brilliant mum, but I also want to be a successful entrepreneur. I want to be the mum, but I want the identity of me. So could you talk us through how you managed to maintain your identity while being a mum and juggle it all successfully?
I have to tell you, there's no formula. It's just called a lot of coffee and probably a lot of booze eventually at night. You know, it's you know, the kids want you, not the nannies. And it is hard. And then, of course, I just want to be with my and with my children all the time. And your personality changes, you know, when you have kids. I'm a much better person. I'm much more patient. I take more calculated risks. I think to be a successful entrepreneur, you have to take risks. But now it's about making more smart decisions and calculated decisions, because I've got a family to look after. It's not just me. So I could be a little bit more frivolous and take those big risks. But it's, you know, it's hard. I don't stop until 1 a.m. because I put the boys down. And of course, they want me to be there all the time. I get this question all the time. There's no real formula. I think it's really important also is to create a support group, because as much as I love my, I mean, I've got the best husband. I love my husband so much, but we're like chalk and cheese. You know, if I have real problems or if I'm having a tough time, I'll call my mom. I'll call my girlfriends. You know what I mean? It's really important to have that support group and to build a community. And that's what I've done here in the UK, is these mommy groups, and to support each other, because it is hard, especially during this lockdown. I've never been through this. It's messed with my head so much. And literally, I love my children, but for God's sakes, to be with them 24/7, I've become a screaming biatch. I mean, it's not normal. It's not normal. But you know, the one thing that I always say, especially in socials, is that we're in it together. It's been a tough time, but we're all going through the same thing. And we're almost out. The lights, we see the light at the end of the tunnel. By the way, are you going to get the vaccine?
Whoa. Well, who's doing the interview, Capri?
I just one question. I'm allowed one question. Are you going to get it?
Honestly, when it first came out, I was like, I'm not having that. No, I'm going to rebel. I don't know what's in it. But big pharma industry. And I was a bit like that. A lot of people have had it, I guess. So I think I probably would.
Yeah.
Or I just do what my wife tells me to do. That's really the truthful
part. Smart, yeah, it's the smartest decision, actually. Yeah, I was actually the same as you. I thought, no, there's no way. The cases will go down and then we'll be fine. But you know what's so weird is that my entire family has had it.
Whoa.
I don't know. I mean, I remember my husband was the first one that got it. We know for sure. I mean, he wasn't tested because it was last year, but he lost his, you know, smell and taste. And obviously that's indicative of COVID. And I smooched him the whole nothing. And then my child, we were about to go away over the Christmas time and we did a test and fly. And they said, your son is positive. I said, what? My son, he's fine. And so I was waiting, you know, because of course he slept with me and I was so worried. Oh my God, we're going to wake up and he's going to have a fever and nothing happened. But, you know, I was sleeping with my son so I could monitor him all night. It's crazy how it's so different with everyone. And now, especially with these new, this is boring. Everyone talks about it all the time. Okay. Let's move on to entrepreneurship. Why did I do this?
It's all right. No worries. Quick one then. Have you experienced mum guilt and how did you get over it?
This is a great question, actually, because I do get this as well. I always experience mom guilt. But can I tell you, for those of you moms and even dads, your kid's biggest inspiration is you. And by your kid seeing you work your little tushy off every single day is the greatest thing for them. So that's what I just keep telling myself. You know, I want my children to see a woman that's strong and independent and a go-getter. And yeah, but it is hard. You know, my time is stretched out all over the place. And after having kids, and to a certain degree, I have become even more ambitious, much smarter. But I do have mom guilt. But then again, it's great for them to see this dynamic, this powerful woman in their lives. So it's it.
That's a good point. I'm really glad you raised that. Because I've
true, though.
Yeah, 100%. I've said to many people that you flourishing as an individual with your own identity is a part of raising your children, not just being there with them, playing with them. So you could argue to a certain degree, parenting is about becoming the best version of you and not just making them everything. And then you end up resenting it and them later. So, yeah, I'm really glad you said that.
Yeah, I don't know if I mean, I would, oh, gosh, I mean, I, of course, I've given a lot of time like resenting. You could never resent your kids, but I think you're the biggest inspiration to what your kids are going to develop into. And it's so funny. The older I get, the more I see myself turning into my mom. I'm thinking, oh, my God, that's what I talk like my mom now. I do. I have mannerisms like my mom. So, you know, it stays with you. You're their biggest inspiration. And especially one thing that I love to tell all my moms out there, you know, because it's hard. We're juggling. We, you know, we're bringing home the money. We're working. We're looking after the kids. We're looking after our husband. But what I tell them is, you know, what's so amazing is that I am the nuts and the bolts and the glue of the family. And that is empowering as well. So go to sleep knowing that, that you are the glue to your entire family. And, you know, thank God my family, I've worked so hard. My family, that my kids are adjusted. They're happy. They're successful at school. And for all you moms and my marriage, I've been with my husband now 10 years and it's a, you know, it's constant work. And do I have to work harder at it? Probably. I mean, maybe he'll say no. Maybe we'll have a bit of an argument. But, you know, I've really worked hard at it. But it empowers me to know that I am that glue. I am the source behind a successful family. I love that.
And I love that too. Mm-hmm. So media must have changed when you were on the front cover of just about every magazine. In my research, it's something like 250 front covers, probably more. And now, of course, social media and Clubhouse and Instagram. So how has media and this thing of a personal brand? Because you were a personal brand before a personal brand was a thing. Like your name was synonymous and everyone knew it. And now everyone's talking about personal brand on social media. So how has that world changed and how have you adapted and sort of disrupted yourself, I suppose?
Well, everyone has a voice now. And the one thing that I love about social is the F word. It's free. It's free. You have free freaking marketing worldwide. How amazing is that? You have a voice. You could grab the attention of anyone all over the world. It's absolutely fantastic. I mean, for me, it's still, I'm a little bit old fashioned still because I need to get involved a little bit more. But for me, I think social media is fantastic. It's such a great platform for anyone. You have no excuse. If you want to start your own business, if you have a great brand idea and you do your research, you do your target markets, you raise the money, you have free marketing. It's absolutely brilliant. And it was never like that when I first started the brand. It was all about, can I get on the cover of the Sun, which I did. I was lucky. I was able to access that. But now anyone can start a business and they do. They start from nothing. It's fantastic. So there's no excuse, ladies and gentlemen. The only person usually we are our own worst enemy. You know, it's what's up here. If you think you could do it, my God, you could do it. And let me tell you something as well, guys. You have to be realistic in the entrepreneurial world. You will get knocked down 100%. It's the ones that are successful, the ones that get back up. And you know what? You'll get knocked down again. You know what you have to do is get back up. It makes you smarter. It makes you tougher. And it makes you successful.
Amen. Now, I'm going to bring a question up because I think this is a really interesting question. It's not in my questions list. Who is the best photographer you've ever worked with? And I'll just add to the end. So this is from Willie, who's watching in, and why?
By the way, Willie Camden, I must have done 500,000 covers for him.
Oh, there you go then. It's a loaded question. I thought it was a good one.
No, seriously. Well, no, Willie, I mean, Willie and I did, oh my goodness. I mean, every single cover under the sun. And this is one thing that I did as well. Will, I hope you don't mind me telling everyone, but one thing about the modeling world that the models weren't understanding is that the model is, there's a lot of money in selling, and not anymore, but back in the day when I was at my height, is that there was a lot of money in syndicating the pictures. And what I did is I got maybe three great photographers, and I just literally did all, you know, because I was able to choose the photographers that I wanted. And a lot of the models would just go, oh, I just want, because I like him. But I did a deal with everyone where I retained some of the ownership. And when we turned around and syndicated it, that's, I mean, I would make six figures just from doing that. But nobody was doing that. Like, why? It's crazy. If you have that power, it's another avenue to make money. But Willie was one of my main photographers. He's great. Oh, Willie. Hi.
What are like the top three traits of a great photographer?
Lighting. As well, I don't like doing a lot of retouching. I don't mind having wrinkles. I don't mind getting older. I don't mind any of that, maybe because I'm in such a good place in my life. I mean, this year, I can't believe, this year I'm turning 50. Can you freaking believe that? I'm actually admitting it. And I'm actually going to have a major rager to celebrate it. I made it to 50. Great. But now I lost my, now I talked about 50 and now I completely lost my train of thought. What the hell were we talking about?
Three traits of a great photographer. You said lighting.
I think direction, you know, it's all about the right angles. I understand this, but it's about the right angles. When you're working for a client, you want to make whatever you're modeling to look the best, because that's your job. And another trait would have to be, Willie, what's another trait? Willie, where are you?
If two photographers had exactly the same technical ability, what would make you pick one over the other?
Lighting for me is everything, honestly, because I don't like a lot of retouching. So it has to be about the lighting. I know how to angle myself. I know how to make the clothes. I know how to make myself look better. I got that. But the lighting, I can't. And again, I don't want to look plastic fantastic like everyone in there. You know, it's gross to me. I don't like it. So that would be the number one.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm. So now we're going to move into some more businessy, entrepreneur-y type questions. Okay. Then we're going to do a cheeky round, which we've started to introduce, and then we're going to do the quickfire round.
Okay.
So before we do the entrepreneurial type questions, can you just tell us a little bit about your entrepreneurial career in the business sense? So your brand by Caprice, and maybe, you know, any other businessy type stuff you've done, whether it's negotiating deals and contracts. Just tell us a bit about that to set the scene.
Well, let's get into it, because I love talking about this. Negotiating contracts, there's a whole art form, and I tell you, this will change your life. Now, especially a lot of people stereotype me, and this is one thing that I had to work through, and I used to get so irate because they used to stereotype me. Oh, she's a model. Two, she's a woman. I mean, in this country, I do believe we still live in a man's world. So I had to, you know, I had these two checkpoints or X's against me that I had to overcome. And I did, especially when I first started my brand. You know, it was hard to pick up that credibility and to get some people to invest in me because they didn't believe in me. They didn't believe I could, purely because of the stereotype. But, oh, you know what? I lost train. Tell me your question again, because I want to.
You're just going to take us on a little bit of your business journey.
Yeah.
And you said.
Contracts. Yeah. Contracts. Now, what you need to do, honestly, this would be the best. Just trust me on this. you're negotiating your contracts, and sometimes, especially as a woman, we tend to think emotionally. In business, your biggest move is complete silence, restriction. Now, somebody you're negotiating, you do not like, and most of the time you don't like what they're saying. You think that they don't understand your brand, you want a better price, whatever the case may be. Just go silent. Until you could take out the emotion, you have to go silent. And that is power, I could assure you. Even in generally in life, you're arguing with your husband, you're arguing with your wife, your boyfriend, your girlfriend, your friend, your mistress, whatever it is. Instead of piling back and just yelling, and because that, trust me, that is my first instinct. And when somebody told me this, I implemented this. So if my husband triggers me, I just absolutely go silent. 9 times out of 10, 20 minutes later, he'll come in and he'll apologize and say, I'm so sorry. Yet if I add more chaos onto the chaos, it just makes things 1,000 times worse. So restriction, that is power. Restriction, just wait till you could take the emotion out and think clearly. Even if you have to wait a week, just go silent. But I'm not going to tell you my other tactics with, because I may, who knows, maybe I'll be doing a contract with somebody here listening. So I do have my tactics, trust you me. And then other aspects of business. What did you focus in on? You had said contracts and then something else.
Just a bit of giving us the journey or a bit of your story about the business world, your brand by Caprice. Because I'm going to ask you a couple of businessy questions.
Mm-hmm. Now, again, you know, I told you I was modeling. I was at the top of my game, turned 30. I had to think, okay, what's next? What's plan B? What will everyone buy into? Again, guys, it's about you have to focus in. What's your target market? You have to understand cash flow as well. Normally, it takes 3 to 5 years for you to make a return on any of your business. So you have to allocate that within your cash flow. You have to allocate. I call it my Bible. I live by my cash flow. It is my absolute Bible. Even now, you know, sometimes you have to adjust. I know what's going in and going out for the next 8 months. And as a result, you have to adjust. And also, when you start to grow your business, which, again, do not stagnate. You have to continue to grow. You have to continue to stay modern. You have to give them, you know, when I think of my next move, for example, I launched By Caprice Home a few years ago. Now, why did I enter into that? Well, I wanted to find a market that wasn't heavily saturated. And what everyone buys into with me is glamour. So glamorous bedding, it's luxurious, but at an incredibly affordable price because I know what my target market is. And so I went for that. And that has been actually my most successful to date is By Caprice Home. So when you look at a different idea, different business idea, you want to hit a sector in the business in business that's not so heavily saturated. So you could go in there and you could saturate and you could take it over and you could create a monopoly at the end of the day. And also, I think it's really important when you do start to grow. I remember I made a big mistake, and the employees that I took on board, I went on the cheap side instead of getting people around me that are smarter, that were a lot more expensive. I had to invest in them a bit more. But at the end of the day, once I started doing that, I made more money and I was able to allocate instead of micromanage continuously. So I was able to manage my time a lot better and ultimately make more money. I mean, there's a few pointers, right? And I think what's really important is you have to have passion for what you do. I mean, you really do. When you start your business, like I said, you're not going to see a return on this for 3 to 5 years. You have to live this. You have to love this. You have to breathe this. You have to be smart about it as well. And so passion, I think, is everything, everything. And you have to be able to, you have to work hard. It's just, I always say there's no such thing as luck, folks. The harder you work, the luckier you get. That's it.
If you could go back to the start, what do you, what would you like to have known differently about your business career?
I mean, some of the mistakes, the stupid, you know, then again, you know, sometimes.
Tell us some of them, Caprice. Tell us some of the stupid mistakes so others can learn.
Well, no, this was a really stupid mistake. I have my factories in China, yet I make my money in sterling. So I would have to buy currency, and I would usually buy on the spot, which means I would buy just that day. I didn't educate myself to know that I could buy, I could buy in advance and I could secure that rate. So literally overnight, I lost a little bit over $1 million. That hurt. God, that hurt. Because for a long time, you know, we were doubling up on you know, against the dollar. And then all of a sudden, almost overnight, it was within 4 or 5 months, the currency went down to, oh God, what was it now? It was a long time ago, about 1.30. I lost my butt. And I was stupid. I didn't, people kept telling me I need to do things differently, and I didn't believe them. I didn't understand them. But also, don't get despondent. Everything in life happens for a reason. And sometimes these horrible mistakes where we could lose a lot of money are the biggest lessons, because I could assure you, I never did that again, ever. And I could have lost a lot more money. So it was a mistake. And I just picked myself back up. It hurt. Yeah, it hurt. And I had to rejig my business model as a result, because a lot of my liquidity just went down the tubes. So you have to know that these mistakes are there for a reason. You've got to learn. The smart people will learn from them and become better. The stupid people will make the mistakes again. So just remember that. We don't want to be stupid. We want to be smart.
You've talked a fair bit, actually, about things like failure and mistakes. Mm-hmm. So if you say fail or you get rejected, tell me, if you don't mind, how it initially feels and then how you work your way around to mastering it.
Yeah, this is a really good question, because this is really real, you know, and being in business, being self-employed and entrepreneurial, yeah, there are failures and there are really bad days, and you just feel like shit. Normally what I do, sorry, can I say, no, it's okay, we could say shit.
You just did anyway, so.
Normally what I do, and I want everyone to try this because this is normal. If I'm having a bad day, just go with it, folks. Just, you know what? Just don't try and fight it. Just go with it. For me, if I have to cry, if I have to scream, I just go with it, because we all have bad days. But promise me one thing, and this works. Promise me one thing. That night, when you go to sleep, you're going to say, you know what? Tomorrow is going to be a better day. And I swear to God, 9 times out of 10, it 100% is. But this is the reality. We have bad days. Just go with it. This is life. But the next day, we're going to get back up and it's going to be better. And we're going to go and tackle the world again. We're going to go after our dreams. That's what we do. That's what entrepreneurs do.
So let's now move into the cheeky round. Are you ready for the cheeky round?
I think.
All right. So first one, what's the part of the modeling industry you dislike the most?
Oh, the bitchiness. It's vain. It's bitchy. Actually, I quite like that. Some people would say it's horrible, but I found it a little bit entertaining. But yeah, sometimes it's not very nice. Yeah.
Okay. In the height of your career, what was the biggest single paycheck you got?
$1 million.
Wow. Was this for a shoot?
Yeah, this was for a campaign, but all I had to do was 5 appearances. But I got a little over $1 million for that. Yeah.
And when was that?
That was, how old was I? I was in my late 20s. Yeah, it was a while ago.
20 years ago.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But that's, you know, that's one. I mean, this has nothing to do with my bike caprice. It was in my modeling days. Yeah, that was the biggest one-off. Here you go. Happy days. Wow. Great. Yes.
Love it. I love how shameless and unassuming and natural you are about money, because sometimes we all know you're a resident Brit, even though you obviously have American roots. We often don't like talking about money, and I find it refreshing. Why? When people, yeah, exactly. Why? Teach us. Why are we so British?
One thing I don't understand. And another thing, I mean, by the way, I love this country. I'm going to spend the rest of my life. I love this country. It's given me opportunity. All my friends are here. I love everything about it. But why is everyone so against, you know, if somebody's successful, it's almost like, oh, shame on you for being successful. But in America, it's quite different. You know, you look at, you know, I read books about entrepreneurs. I'm intrigued. How did you do it? Oh my God, that's amazing. You did it on your own. How do you, you know, what are your secrets? We embrace, we look up, we inspire to be like them. But here, especially, ooh, you're talking about money. Ooh, you're talking about, ooh, how you like making money. You know what? I'm saying what everyone's thinking, by the way. I mean, let's embrace this. Let's go for it. It's great to wake up in the morning and have something to aspire to be, to do. And especially as a parent, you know, I'm doing this for my kids now. Before, I was doing it for, you know, myself to get a Prada bag or something ridiculous. But now this is for my children. I'm proud of it, you know? So let's embrace it. Let's get inspired by it.
Amen. Right. What's the most expensive item you've ever bought?
Probably a house. There was another thing that I used to do. I had a portfolio of quite a few real estate investments. I would go in and get government repos or distressed situations. I'd go over because I had so much liquidity, and I'd go in, I'd hold on to it for 2 years and then flip it and then buy something, you know, to avoid capital gains, reinvest it. So I was quite a successful business for a while. And then, of course, we got hit. The economy was a mess in 2008. And then I had to, and then I just sold off all my investments. So probably a house.
Hmm. Okay. Was it true that you were offered a role in Baywatch?
I was. I was getting, and you know what? That's, my ego was this big. And you know what I said? I said, oh my God, no, I'm not. And I told them no, I declined. What an idiot. What a schmuck. I mean, that is like the ultimate marketing amazing. And, you know, because even with marketing, for me, with my business, even if I'm walking around in the Daily Mail, you know, picks it up as one of the lead stories. Oh, Caprice walking out of the store looking a certain way. That's a way of selling my brand. That's a way of people buying into the brand. It's power. And with something like Baywatch, because at the time it was the hottest show on TV. It was after Pamela Anderson left. I look back and I think, what an idiot. Oh my God. You see, that's what ego does to you, folks. Put your ego in your back pocket, because you could lose money from ego. Woof. Yeah.
Right. Okay. Have you ever had a really bad celebrity date? Dish the dirt.
I remember, I don't think I've told anyone this. So there was, I did the MTV Music Awards a few years, and there was one year that flew in, and then I met, it was a singer, he was quite big at the moment, called Fred Durst of Limp Bizkit. It was quite a long time ago. Anyways, Fred came up to me flirting, we were both flirting, blah, blah, blah. You know, it was like 7 a.m. and my publicist comes up and he said, oh my God, we need to get on a plane. You need to just get your bags and we need to go. And Fred's like, no. And I said, sorry, man, I gotta go. I gotta work. So got my bags, flew. And then Fred called me and he said, listen, and actually nobody's ever bought it. He said, I want to buy you a first class ticket to New York and take you out to lunch. I said, what? I said, do you know how much first class? Are you joking? And I said, and he said, no. Please. It's the weekend coming up. So, and I said, okay. That's an idiotic move. First class ticket to New York just for lunch. That's crazy, but okay. So I went, and then we went to lunch, and there was just paparazzi packed everywhere, and then he got a call. We were only there for 20 minutes. He got a call. And he said, I got to go to the studio. I said, you are joking. I schlepped all the way here from New York to go have lunch for 20 minutes. I'm the idiot for doing it, but are you serious? And he said, yeah, but I'm just going to go to the studio and then, you know, we could have a drink later. And I said, okay. So he went out one way. I went out the other way. I went back because I had a flat in New York. So I went back to my flat. And I called up his assistant and I said, here, just take my I don't want the other half of this ticket. I'm not going to meet up with him later. You're joking. And my ego was so big. So then I just bought my own ticket back to London. And then I left. I thought, and then his assistant called and she said, nobody flakes on Fred. I said, really? Well, I just did. Bye. I mean, it's like battle of the egos in the entertainment world, too. But that was quite an expensive date because then I bought my own ticket back. But
well, thank you for sharing that here. If you've never shared that before, that's great.
Sure.
Right. Are you ready now for the quick fire round?
Yeah.
Okay.
What exactly is this? What I just have to just say. A one-off, whatever I'm thinking. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. And shorter answers if you want. If you want to go into detail, that's fine. But permission to have short answers.
Okay.
So is there anything that you used to believe, but you've recently changed your mind about?
Let's go back to that. Next one.
Okay. Is there anything that you strongly believe that a lot of people you know don't believe?
Yeah, the harder you work, the luckier you get. A lot of people just wanted to, you know, they either want to marry somebody with money or become a reality star or something ridiculous.
What's the best advice you ever remember receiving?
Recently, the restriction. Just take the emotion out. Power.
What's the worst advice you ever remember receiving?
The worst advice, probably staying in an investment and just trying to make it work when I knew in my gut that it it's really hard when you invest so much time and money into something and it's not working. A lot of people tend to put in more and say, I'm going to make this work. But sometimes, like I told you before, the best play is to get out, take your losses, get out, invest in something that's going to work.
If there was one person you'd love to see interviewed on a show like this, The Disruptive Entrepreneur, who would it be?
I would have loved for you. It could be anyone, alive, dead, whatever.
Yeah. And if your choice is dead, let's do an alive as well.
Okay. Let's do an alive one. Okay. I'd love for you to be interesting if you interviewed Nelson Mandela. I mean, be interested in that. I'd be interested just in him, period. But, you know what I would love? You know who you should interview? So interesting is Ruth Purcell. Now, Ruth, she is but she's very, very private, but she's one of the richest women in this country. She sold an online party. It's called Party Poker. She sold it for a few bill. But what an interesting lady. Wow. And she's a mom as well. And she's a great ice skater. I mean, she's just, she surprises everywhere. But very, very, very smart. You should definitely you look her up. She's great.
Challenge accepted. Okay, so is there one thing that you think is really wrong in the world that you'd like to change?
Yeah, I know everyone is talking about this, but I really believe a kindness goes a long way. You know, everyone is very, very self-consumed, and especially during this pandemic, even with the way it's spread, how everyone is going out and doing their own thing, and you know, and then there are people like us that have been in our houses for literally almost 3 months, you know what I mean? Dealing with the mental, you know, the kids really suffering and the whole thing, but we're making a difference and we're trying to save lives here. We're trying to help to stop the spread. So I think kindness goes a long way. Think about other people, think about the world, think about, you know, as well saving the planet. There's a whole thing with, I'm very green. And I think if we just make a little bit of effort, even, you know what I've done recently, I wanted to show my kids, I put everything in my house. Okay. Not everything, but half, everything plastic, anything that I bought, you have no idea the pile that I had. It was actually frightening. And so I told my kids, I said, okay, guys, let's just, my shampoos and my soaps, let's get bars of soap. And let's not buy the shampoo in a plastic bottle, or we get refillables and put it in glass. And I'm slowly starting to change. And if we all made the slightest difference, how we could make our world better. And also, I'm worried for my kids. I'm worried for my grandkids. So just if we all put in a little bit of effort, it could go a long way for our children.
This podcast is called The Disruptive Entrepreneur. What does the word disruptive mean to you?
Why are you asking me that?
Because I ask every single person that.
The disruptive.
It's the name of the show. Yeah.
Disruptive, rebellious. What have people said before in the past?
Innovation. Change, progression, shaking up the status quo and the norm.
You know what? Can I just talk about one more thing? And then I know I'm a big talker, but but there's one thing that's really important with entrepreneurship is change. And, you know, a lot of people are so scared of change. But when I got rid of this whole thing, you know, everyone likes complacency. We wake up, we go do our job. You know, we have a nice, it doesn't stress us. We have a nice, secure relationship. But to be an entrepreneur, you have to embrace change. You have to almost instigate change, be excited about change and constantly change. And I think that some of the more successful entrepreneurs kind of have developed this whole ethos. Anyways, I just wanted to share that because that's a big thing with me. And I had a hard time, you know, I quite like complacency, you know, and the second that I changed that up and embraced change in my life is when I became even more successful.
And I'm not letting you get away with this because I asked a question and you said, come back to it.
Oh God. Oh,
so yeah. What one thing did you used to believe for a long time, but you've recently changed your mind on?
Right. Oh, God, I need to think about this. That's a great question. I usually have an answer for everything. You know, I remember right before I had kids, I told my husband, I said, you know what, it'll be fine. You know, I was a lot older. I was 40 when I had my kids. I told him it's going to be fine. We're going to have nannies. My life is not going to change. Trust me. Just trust me on this. He already had 3 kids. I said, I'll take care of everything. No problem. That was the most naive thing I have ever said in my entire life. You really have to, I mean, could you ever really be prepared for this? But then again, it's one of the most wonderful things that I've ever experienced in my life. I became better. I work harder. But I would have to say, my perspective about motherhood, it's a newfounded perspective. I really look up to moms. I really even look up to teachers, you know, especially during this time of homeschooling. It is really difficult. They need to make more money. This is not right. It is really, really difficult. And all you moms out there and dads, it's home. It's real. I mean, that was shocking. I scream every single day. In fact, my seven-year-olds, I'm looking at their pet. I don't even know some of the answers. I mean, it's just insane. I think that'll be my next thing is raising the teachers, going to government, you know, getting people to sign a petition so that they can make more money. I have a newfounded respect for teachers. I have a newfounded respect, and boy, was I naive when it came to parenthood. But I have to say, it is the best thing, and I cannot imagine my life without my beautiful, beautiful boys. But it's tough.
Thanks so much, Caprice, for being on the Disruptive Entrepreneur. It's been so much fun. Where do we follow you? Where do you maybe tell us what you're up to, your next and current ventures?
I mean, obviously all the social platforms, especially Instagram. I actually do my own, not the business, the By Caprice Home. Somebody does do that for me. But I do the Caprice Bray official Instagram. I do it all myself. I read. I'm very engaging. I actually went off Twitter. I'll tell you, I actually went off Twitter. I don't think do we have time? No, you know what? I just don't like Twitter.
Go on, say it. We got time.
No, you know what? I didn't like the fact that at one point I was doing this TV show and there was so much hate, and I just thought, you don't know what you're talking about. And sadly, I had to stay stump. I had to stay quiet because of contractual reasons. I was getting slammed, and it was really affecting me. And so I said, you know what? How dare Twitter give these people that are slandering my name? They have no idea what they're talking about. I am all about free, you know, freedom of voice. But when you go to purposely try and hurt somebody and make them feel bad and slander their name when you have no idea, you've never met them. No, do not give them a goddamn platform. And Twitter allowed these people. They gave these people a platform. And I thought, no, I'm going off Twitter. Sod you. Instagram, I mean, if you know, not everyone has nice things to say, and that's okay. But when it's slanderous, at least on Instagram, you could delete them, you know, not give them a platform, not give them a voice to hate. That I don't agree with.
Amen.
Yeah, amen.
Caprice, thank you. I've had so much fun. I hope you enjoyed it. Really kind to share your time. You rock. Thank you very much.
Thanks for having me. Bye.
Bye. Thank you.